Welcome to Parents Perspective. About 2% of children under the age of 18 are adoptees, yet they make up 6 to 9% of kids with learning disabilities, 5% of kids in psychotherapy, and 10 to 15% of children in treatment and psychiatric facilities. For older children adopted after infancy, the road is often a rough one. From a parent's perspective, what can be done to help this special group of kids and their parents? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today, we are fortunate to have as our guests two genuine experts in this field. James H. Mabel, a licensed clinical social worker and father of two grown children, works with adolescents and families in foster care, residential care, and adoption. James is supervisor of the Adoption Unit for the Montgomery County, Maryland Department of Health and Human Services. Welcome to Parents Perspective, James.
Thank you very much, and I'm glad to be here.
Kathleen Dugan is the mother of 12 children, 4 birth children and 8 adoptees. Her birth children were 12, 9, 6, and 3 when she and her husband decided to adopt their first special needs child 22 years ago. Kathleen had heard a notice on her radio about adoption and it started her thinking. Now the children are pretty much grown up and she has started the Center for Adoption Support and Education, or CASE as we'll refer to it. We're so glad you could join us, Kathleen.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. Thanks.
James, what issues arise when parents adopt children who are not infants, who are maybe 5 and over?
Well, many of the issues that arise are the same as adopting a younger child, a toddler. Some things that might occur is that with an older child, that child has already made relationships in the community, schools, and a lot of times they don't want to leave those relationships. It's taking on a new experience. We're fortunate to have a lot of our children in this county adopted by their foster parents, so they remain in a known environment, that known environment, school, friends, and they don't have to do a lot of movement. Now, naturally, the older child knows and has a working experience, and I use the term working experience, a knowledgeable experience of the biological parents, but they will give consent. As I said, usually a child over 10 years of age has to give consent for an adoption.
Is that a national rule or that localities can change those ages?
I can't speak of it being nationally. I know within this county and state, children over 10. So that child will give consent if they want to be adopted. Now, that does not say the department. We can make the department, and when I speak of the department, I'm talking about the Department of Health and Human Services. We can make a decision, the CASE plan, that adoption is in the best interest of the child. But again, if that child is over 10, they must give consent.
And this is legal consent in court? They have
yes.
to appear in court and say, yes, indeed, this is fine?
Yes, unless they're excused by their attorney. They do have legal representation in court.
Okay, now is that representation paid for by the prospective adopted parents, or is it paid
by the
state?
No, there's no charge to the prospective adoptive parent.
What's the difference between adopting a newborn and, say, a 5-year-old?
I'm always pleased when we have folk that want to adopt an older child, and we're talking about 5 years or older. With the 5-year-old child, you might have some problems of learning disabilities, some developmental delays that have been diagnosed after the age of 3 that are known now. With the newborn, you would not know that particular.
So you'd know more about issues that
yes.
might have arisen.
And again, with the older child, too, you have more history of the parents. These are not throwaway children.
Absolutely not.
And these are children that deserve your love and affection. And if you have something to give, they are willing to give back.
Kathleen, how can parents best prepare to adopt an older child? It's obviously a big thing to do.
Well, I think educationally you can prepare by reading materials and possibly talking to other foster parents, contacting your local foster parent association for other parents, since 85% of most children that are adopted through the counties in Maryland are adopted by their foster parents. And learning from their experience, the emotional part of that is a little more difficult. I think you need to keep an open mind that these children have a history and have a family, and that you need to incorporate that into your family instead of automatically thinking that the child needs to adjust to your family and your situation.
James, we've all heard the heartbreaking stories of children from Eastern European orphanages. Is there the same kind of attachment problem prevalent with American adoptees?
I would say so, yes. As again, we're speaking about the older child being adopted. These children have knowledge of their families. And you're not asking them to forget that. You're asking them to accept a situation where somebody's going to be loving, caring for them, and they're going to be their parents too. So in reality, what they're going to have is two sets of parents. They're going to have the new parents who are their adoptive parents and, quote, their biological parents. So especially for the teenage child.
A young woman I know recently adopted a little girl from China, and the child is just about a year old, which is much younger than most of the children we're talking about today. But we noticed that she was unusually friendly. She didn't seem to have any stranger anxiety in the group of people I was with, none of whom she had ever seen before. And her mother said, well, it was a survival thing. She was friendly to everyone. But she said, now the problem is going to be attaching herself to her own particular family. Attachment is not something she's really had before.
Well, again, as I said, it's been mentioned earlier, probably about 85% of our children are adopted within the county. A place for adoption with the foster parents. Only about 15% of our kids are adopted by relatives. Mm-hmm. So they have developed some form of a relationship with the adoptive parent.
It was interesting when you were talking about your friend that attachment is a problem, meaning that a child can't learn to love someone else. But attachment difficulties go one step farther, and in the first year of our life, they believe, some people think it's two, we form our conscience, and that's where the difficulty comes in with children with attachment problems. It isn't so much that they can't love you, it's that they have no conscience, and some of the difficulties that arise from that, as you're well aware of, I'm sure, as they get older, is that they do fend for themselves, think of themselves and no one else. And so attachment goes one step further in developing a conscience.
Taking that a little farther, too, if you're talking about the older child, especially adolescent, it might have had, I don't want to say multitude of foster care placements, but two or three, not necessarily resulting because of problems on their behalf. But it could be the foster parent was only doing it for a limited period of time. And you want to always try to make them the right match, if at all possible. That child might have developed mistrust in people that I can't go, if I begin to give love and I'm only going to be uprooted, I'm only going to be here for a short period of time. So I don't want to be vulnerable. I don't want to commit myself because I don't know what's going to happen. I have to be somewhat guarded. It's almost like the child had used to say that it's given enough to eat but would still hoard food under the bed at night. Not because they're hungry, but because they, in past, they didn't know when their next meal was going to come. You hope to place that child with a perfect match, if at all possible, someone that's going to love, open their home, and is going to say to that child, you are mine no matter what comes. I'm not going to give up on you. If you got problems in school, I'm going to be your advocate. I might not have given birth to you, but I'm going to go and fight for you just as though you were my own child, that I did give birth to you. And then hopefully, with support coming from CASE and other organizations that we use, support mentoring group from other adoptive parents, that adoptive parent will be able to make the commitment and give the services and have that child not only to 18 years of age, but for the rest of his or her life.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our show on adoption of older children.
The excellent new book, Parents as Mentors, by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is a practical guide to bringing out the abilities in your child. Parents as Mentors is available at all bookstores.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today we are talking with James Mabel and Kathleen Dugan about adopting older children.
Attachment disorder is not the end of the world. There are so many avenues that we can go down for education, for therapy, and for help for children. And there are special organizations throughout the United States, in particular in Evergreen, Colorado, that do a lot of intense work with children with attachment difficulties.
So it's something that can be treatable. And
it is definitely something that's treatable.
James, what kinds of kids are generally not adopted until they're past infancy? We have in our minds kids with real problems of one kind or another. Is that necessarily the case?
Well, you have to look. I'm representing a public agency. So I'm looking at children that are coming into the foster care system. Those are the kids that we have usually had, and we don't make a plan for adoption unless those children have been in care 12 months or more. Usually, if they've been in care 9 months, we start looking at adoption being a, you know, possible plan for the child. So, again, that child is no longer an infant. And then if a child is coming to care, it's going to usually take a year to a year and a half before we can go through the finalization and prepare that child for adoption. So the child has been in the system at least for a year and a half before it is completed.
So this doesn't necessarily have to do with what the problem is with the child. It has to do with what put the child in the system in the first place.
Right. And we would do something called concurrent planning. That's working with the biological parents to try to resolve the situation, necessitated foster care placement. And hopefully our first objective is always to reunite families. That's what we hope to do. Mm-hmm. But if that is not possible, we work with what we consider is in the best interest of a child. And if adoption is that avenue, we would look forward to it. We always try to place children back with, if not the biological parents, we try to do a relative placement. If a relative placement is not available, then we look towards adoption.
Kathleen, you've had a lot of experience with a lot of different kind of adoption situations, just your 8 adopted children. Is there an increase in personal and family difficulties as the age of the child at adoption increases, in other words, as you're adopting an older and older child, or are there other issues that overtake that?
It'd be nice if there are other issues that overtook that, but yes, the older a child is, the increase of the difficulties in that child's life, and the difficulties in forming relationships, and the difficulties of fitting into another family. Mm-hmm. I mean, we talk a lot about adoptive parents, but in reality, these children who have come from situations that have been difficult for them are placed in like a perfect family with a mom and a dad and sometimes other siblings. And the feeling of inadequacy for these children is extremely high. So, again, not to sound like an infomercial for the Center for Adoption Support and Education, but CASE gives individual support to children. We have support groups that are age-appropriate, say 6 and 7-year-olds, 8 and 9-year-olds, 10, 11, 12, so that they can talk about some of the feelings that they have that they can't talk about with their adoptive parents for fear of hurting their feelings, but again, not being able to fit into well.
Some things, just as simple as a name for an older child. The family might be named Smith that they are residing with, and they are going by the name of Jones. And going to school, why isn't your name the same as your parents? It's just simple things, being able to work through that. And again, having support systems for the, not only the child, but for the adoptive parent too, that is very important. To have someone that they can call, not just looking at the social worker, but having somebody that's had a similar experience that they feel comfortable talking to, that's very important.
We always talk about parents need peers to be able to bounce things off of, but it sounds like adoptive parents need peers even more.
That's correct, because as we were talking about before, there are no manuals for raising children, period. But to bring a child into your home that already has a past history and a past family relationship is extremely difficult. And to be able to go someplace where you have a support system, the greatest part about the support systems for the children and for the parents is a totally empowering situation. And, you know, once you're empowered, things can begin to fall into place.
Now, you've had an awful lot of experience, as we've been alluding to. What's been your biggest challenge as an adoptive parent?
Actually, I think my biggest challenge as an adoptive parent has been not only educating myself, but having to go out and educate the community about what special needs my children do have. And sometimes it's almost like beating your head against a brick wall. with teachers and with other healthcare professionals not quite understanding. Because on the other end of that, these children have become quite able people in the realm of they can be anything that you want them to be. And so lots of times, even though they're having difficulty in school or they're getting some kind of psychiatric intervention, they're showing a totally complete different side of them that you might see at home. So it becomes more difficult when you try to explain to a teacher or maybe a mental health facilitator exactly what your difficulties are, because this child knows what he's supposed to do and what he's supposed to say and how he's supposed to present it.
So they're very good actors.
Well, they've had to be. Like, it's a survival technique. Mm-hmm. That's certainly not a criticism of the children. It's just their life experience.
I mentioned a woman who adopted a Chinese little girl, and this is not a Chinese woman. My question to both of you is, how do you feel about cross-cultural adoption?
Well, my preference would always be to place a child, if possible, within their same race. If that is not possible, then I want to give every support I possibly can if that child is adopted out of his race into another culture. I think it behooves the adopted parent, if they're adopting cross-culture, to go receive some training, to make connections, to utilize their worker to do reading on cross-cultural adoption, transracial adoption, however you might view it, and to try to give those support systems to the adoptive child.
Are there certain organizations that parents should have an antenna up for that would help in that regard?
Well, again, within the county system, we have a foster parent / adoptive association. They can utilize that. That is an organization that provides ongoing, well, you're required to take 25 or 30 hours to be approved, and then you have continuous educational classes. And I know we have someone here today with us from CASE, but their organization can provide the training and insight, too, in that type of situation. And we would utilize them. I would say probably 95% of the children that are adopted through my agency receive what we call a subsidy. That can be a financial subsidy as well as a medical assistance subsidy card. They can utilize that card, too, for therapeutic training or services.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on adoption of older children.
For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today we are talking with James Mabel and Kathleen Dugan about adopting older children.
Going back to the cross-cultural business for a second, across the country, if parents are considering doing something like this, what's their best resource? Would it be county health services, even though they're doing something a little different?
Like James, I agree that in a perfect world, children should stay within their own race, but we don't live in a perfect world. And I know that through my own experience, because I have a child that's African American also, the best thing that you can do is, like James said, to go to an organization where there are support groups. My son belongs to a support group, obviously, through CASE, where there are biracial and multicultural children adopted by Caucasian families. And it has been a tremendous help, not only to him, but also to us. It makes us more aware of what some of his needs are. And it makes him more aware that he's part of a family no matter what, and that there are other children in the same situation he's in, that he isn't, you know, freakish or different in any other way. And there's been a close bond with all of the children in the organization, which has been great.
You know, there are many books on transracial adoption from Tapestry Books. I just pulled across this one right here, Loving Across the Color Line by Sharon Rush. This is for parents.
Okay, but I
think an older child can read this too.
And they have lots of books for children mm-hmm. about being different. I know, for instance, one of the great things I learned by being in one of our support groups was that as my son went through school, that I would educate his classmates from very early on. And I had a great experience. The first time when he was in kindergarten, someone had asked him why he wasn't the same color his mother was. And of course, we had prepared him always from the time he was little, saying all these wonderful things that I thought were so appropriate. And he didn't use one of the things that we had set him up to use, but his teacher overheard him say, "Well, I don't know. She was just born that way, and I love her anyway." And we're all automatically thinking, you know, like, I just want him to be happy with his blackness. I want him to feel secure with it. Not even thinking that, well, I'm sorry, she can't be as good as me or like me or whatever. And it was interesting, and I read a book that was appropriate for kindergarten age. And it's just a story. It's Cho-Cho finds a mother, this little creature, looks for his mother. He's yellow and he's striped and he's silly looking, and he looks at striped people, he looks at yellow people, he looks at yellow animals, and he sees a bear, and the bear takes him into her home where she has a crocodile and an owl and many other children that she has adopted.
What would you like prospective adoptive parents to know in advance?
One, that they're not out there on their own. There's support for them. Again, there are support systems out there that they can utilize. If they don't know, don't be afraid to ask. Don't think you're operating in a vacuum. Again, we will match you with someone. Even if you have adopted, and we use the term, you're going through finalization, don't be afraid to call my agency. We have not closed the door on you. We will provide service to you, or we will refer you to someone that can help you with your particular need.
And you were also mentioning before that even after children are adopted, at least in this area of the country and maybe in the rest of the country, there's still financial assistance available for therapeutic work and all kinds of things.
Most of our kids are receiving a subsidy. That's a financial subsidy, and it's based upon age and needs of the child, as well as we provide a Maryland medical assistance card to them, because it might be a financial burden. I'm a big advocate of anything that's owed to you, and I use that term. It's free. If you can use the freebies, use them. Just sometimes you have to do research. Utilize your library. Everybody has a library mm-hmm. card. Nobody's, you know, it's something your taxes pay for. So utilize those things.
For parents listening out there who are interested in pursuing adoption of older children, what resources are available for parents to turn to?
I think the Center for Adoption Support and Education is an excellent place to start. We have a website that's interactive. It's www.adoptionsupport.org. www.adoptionsupport.org. Our number for our Silver Spring, Maryland office is 301-593-9200. And our office in Falls Church is area code 703-533-7950.
So CASE is not yet a national organization.
Not yet, although we have talked all over the United States about setting up similar support systems in different states.
But people can also get these phone numbers from your website as well.
Correct.
If they weren't quick enough with a pencil and paper.
Correct.
Okay.
National Adoption Information Clearinghouse, which is located at 330 C Street, Southwest Washington, D.C. Their phone number is 888-251-0075.
You want to give that one more time?
Okay, it's the National Adoption Information Clearinghouse, 330 C Street, C as in Charles, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20447. Phone, area code 888-251-0075. We talked about books, too. Tapestry Books has numerous books regarding adoption. They have adoption book catalog. Tapestry Books, that's a 1-800 number, 765-2367. Tapestry Books, 1-800-765-2367.
Well, we have been very fortunate to have both of you with us, James Mabel and Kathleen Dugan, and a lot of parents listening have found a lot of support and a lot of help for something they may want to do.
I've enjoyed it.
Thank you so much.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Parents as Mentors. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573. That's 1-800-791-8573. And let us know what station you're listening to. We have programs that are now on all over the world, so we're very eager to find out what station you're listening to. We'd like to send you a copy of Parents as Mentors. Parents as Mentors is available also at all major bookstores and on the web. For an audiocassette copy of any Parents Perspective show, just send a $5 check or money order to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015. That's P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
You can reach Parents Perspective through your local station or call our toll-free number, 1-800-791-8573. You can also email us at parentsper@aol.com. That's P-A-R-E-N-T-S-P-E-R. To learn more about us and our book, Parents as Mentors, visit our website. It's a shortcut address, http://i.am/parentsperspective, all one word. It's like I am Parents Perspective, http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.